I have a thing. It's a band. I wear it on my wrist all the time. I let it track everything that I do. And this is a shot from the Microsoft Health app. And I suppose the absence of the data that's flowing into this is pretty obvious here. It feels empty. Maybe it feels broken, perhaps a bit useless. Here's the app with some data that's actually flowing into it now. It feels a bit more alive, don't you think? Now, I don't know about you, but I like to see the way that data flows in and out of my applications. I like to look back onto this activity and see how active I was, maybe how restful I was. Did I have a good week or a bad week? Did I feel the good weeks or did I feel the bad weeks? But also, I like to track activities that you might not necessarily think are traditionally maybe workouts. Here's an example of one. This is a screenshot from when I went along to the sing-along Sound of Music. Now, I don't know if you've been to one of these things before. Essentially, you go along to a big theater, and there's a couple hundred people, and they put the film on, and there's a little bouncing ball at the bottom, which then goes along and shows you the words, and you'll sing along. Now, I agreed to go to this with my family, took the kids, and when my wife said, oh, I've got tickets for this, said, that sounds like fun. What I didn't realize when we went along to this was that you also dress up to go to it. So the kids are there, and they're in lederhosen, looking really cute, and my wife went and got herself a nun's cassock, and she got one for me too. So off we went, we got in the taxi, and we arrived, this was at the Bristol Hippodrome, and we arrived there, we were kind of getting a little bit fine, we might have been there maybe, we thought we were a few minutes late, and so we ran up the stairs, I gave the tickets to the usher, and the usher went, quick, the parade of nuns is about to start. I had no idea what's going on. So she says to me, go and join the parade. So we put the kids in their seats, and all the way down the side of the theatre, there was a line of nuns, I don't know, about 80, 90 nuns or so. Not real nuns. Oh, no, there was one real nun. But anyway, there was 80. And what they were doing, they were parading up onto the stage and then across it and down the other side. So we thought, oh, well, we'll join in this. This is just a bit of fun. And as we were walking along the stage there, I realised there was a compere at the end of the stage who... when it was maybe an interesting-looking nun came along, she stopped them and said, oh, hang on, you just wait there. And it was only a couple of weeks later when I was looking back through the data from this, and I looked and said, what are those two weird spikes at the start when my heart's suddenly gone ba-boom? I went, oh, yeah, that was the moment that I realised I was standing on stage in front of 600 people in the Bristol Hippodrome dressed as a nun, and I didn't plan to do this. So that was that first spike. The second spike, that was, so all the nuns had gone past, and there was maybe a very tall one, a very small one, a very round one, a very square one, and me. And the second spike was when I realised that the compere with the microphone said to the first nun at the end of the line, so what's your name and why are you dressed as a nun? And I realised I hadn't thought this through properly, and my heart went, ba-dum. And without me tracking this data and storing this data, collecting it for my things, if I hadn't done that, I would have forgotten all about the time I dressed up as a nun at the Bristol Hippodrome. Now, let's take that to a next level and see what can I actually learn from this. As I say, I track everything that I do with this. This is actually from when I was on holiday. I like to run when I'm on holiday, and there was a hill behind us the last time we went, and I wanted to get to the top of the hill. It's 6K up, 6K down, but it also went to a height of about 450 metres. So it was a bit of a challenge. So each day I went a bit higher still. And at the same time, I was also tracking my sleep to see how well I was sleeping. Look at the luxury of holiday sleep hours. What was the average on there? 9.5 hours. Yeah, it doesn't happen often. So I was tracking my sleep. But one morning, I was looked at the application on my phone, and my phone said to me, you shouldn't exercise late in the day because you don't sleep as well when you exercise late at night. And that wasn't you, a blanket response to humans. That was me. I don't sleep as well when I exercise late at night. That's something I never would have realized had I not been collecting that data and tracking it. So what could we learn from this? It's the power of what you can learn from when you trust your data to someone. In this case, I trust my data to Microsoft. But in an age when we can track, capture, measure, train, and learn from all that we say, do and touch, who do you trust? So to answer that question, please welcome Graham Cluley.
And I've got a very important message for you, and the message is this. You can trust me. Of course you can trust me. Number of reasons why you can trust me. First of all, look at that, gorgeous. Microsoft trusts me. Andrew from Microsoft has just invited me on the stage to speak to you today. And if Microsoft trusts me, and you trust Microsoft, you should trust me, right? Why not? Sounds pretty good, to me at least. So you can trust me. Now, some of you are looking a little bit unconvinced in the audience as to whether you can trust me or not. So let me give you some other reasons to trust me. Meet my dog. Here he is, Archie. Obviously not dog lover. Oh no, there's a few dog lovers over there. Here's Archie the dog. Now, I don't necessarily trust you. I didn't realize quite how big this screen was going to be in there. Some people with very good quality cameras. But you can see I've actually pixelated out his dog tag because I thought you might be able to get my home phone number. So I clearly don't trust you. Now, having said that, I have told you the name of my dog, which means now you can get into my eBay account. Not so good. I've also ostracized that half of the audience who love cats, but I've got that covered as well. Here's my cat, Marble. All right, okay. I've won over the audience entirely. Now, unfortunately, Marble is no longer with us. Actually, I've just given you my Amazon password as well. There was an unfortunate business involving a vehicle and Isaac Newton's third law of motion, which meant that Marble's no longer, he can't be here on the stage with me tonight. Not my fault, trust me on that. Other things I can tell you, I don't like peanut butter. I love Marmite. I don't drink tea. I can't even begin to give you my opinions on Birmingham. But these are all genuine opinions of mine. These are things about me which, even if you disagree with them, they are true about me and reasons why you might want to trust me. Doesn't mean I'm inherently untrustworthy or a bad human being, but trust me, they're true. So what about the internet? Well, I would argue you can't trust the internet. The internet's not always reliable. Let me give you some examples. On 23rd of April 2013, the Dow Jones stock index plummeted. Many points, as you can see on the chart up there. Why did it do that? Why was there panic on Wall Street? Well, because of 23 short little words. Just 12 words actually caused that to happen. 72 characters, 12 words. What 12 words could have such a dramatic effect? Well, they were these. Breaking, two explosions in the White House, and Barack Obama is injured. And you're now scratching your heads and thinking, oh, you know, I'm sure I would have remembered if this occurred. And this was tweeted from the official Associated Press Twitter account. Someone who you would trust on the internet. Many people did trust it, and they sold their shares, and there was a bit of a panic as a result. But of course, it wasn't true. That never actually happened. What happened was a group of rapscallions called the Syrian Electronic Army cracked into the Associated Press Twitter account and posted that message. They could have posted all manner of things. They could have posted a link to something malicious designed to infect your computer, but they decided to do that instead because they're kids. So you can't trust everything on social media. Also, you can't necessarily trust email, which is a great shame, because email is cool. We've had email for decades. I imagine many of you, even though the death of email has been predicted on many occasions, still using email avidly and can't get enough of it. Or maybe you are getting enough of it, but you're spending most of the time filtering it instead. There's problems with email, though. Because in the early days, when email was invented, when the SMTP protocol was devised, the only people who were using the internet were people like these guys. Trustworthy guys with facial hair. Yeah, our kind of people, right? Socks and sandals kind of guy, tie-dye shirts. These sort of chaps. I don't know what happened to these fellas. They should really form a company or something, have some kind of success like that. But these are the kind of people who used the internet in the early days. People like academics and governments were using email. They never imagined that great unwashed civilians would ever be allowed onto the internet and to use email. And yet that is what has happened. And people still trust SMTP email today, even though internet email isn't being encrypted and it's so easy to forge emails. I got a forged email the other day, a phishing email from a chap called Bill. Here he is. Bill at Microsoft.com. He has a business proposal for me. Jolly kind of him, isn't it? And he's saying he'd like to invest $1 billion in my business. However, first of all, I need a little bit of money from you, which seems reasonable. If he has $1 billion to invest, I'm sure he has, there's some kind of handle in charge. And these, of course, are phishing emails. And these sort of attacks happen all the time. And it's because if email was, well, email would never be invented today. Email would never catch on today because it's inherently insecure and untrustworthy. So we can't trust social media. We can't trust email. What about websites? Here's a website. Anyone recognize this one? Funnily enough, very few of you want to admit knowing this one. Ashley Madison, of course, where you can go for your online bit of nookie with someone. And life is short, have an affair, it says. But it tries to reassure you about its security because they have a little graphic saying SSL secure site. Oh, that's all right then. That's not a problem. Okay, well then I'll do that. Furthermore, it still says to this day, as seen on BBC News, Reuters, The Sun, The Telegraph, The Times. Well, duh, yeah, I think you could probably add quite a lot of other publications and news outlets to that list. Because, of course, they got hacked and the information broke. You know, people trusted them to look after the information. Rightly or wrongly, they trusted them, and that trust was misplaced. So, you can't trust the internet. Not completely, not yet. And the internet is getting much, much bigger because of this thing which Kevin was just telling you about, the Internet of Things. All manner of things are becoming connected to the internet. And the challenge, of course, is that many of these devices won't necessarily have been built with security and privacy and trust in mind, as we will see. But let's start with something, a calming image. Here we have some cows. Lovely, gorgeous. And do you know what's happening with these cows? Well, a Dutch company is attaching wireless sensors to cows in order to monitor when a cow falls sick or when a cow becomes pregnant. Now, I don't know what kind of sick pervert wants to know every time a cow has sex. You know, oh, I've been pregnant for precisely 27 seconds. There's been a bit of humpage overnight. That kind of, in fact, every cow is sending 200 megabytes worth of data each year from its sensors. Now, I mean, surely, you know, I've had sex, I haven't had sex, that's just going to be a binary, right? It's just one or zero, you would think. Maybe there's extra information, positions, I don't know, length. Well, please, make your own excuses. So after something like that, I really want to sort of wash my mind and get rid of all those filthy thoughts from myself. And so my thoughts turn naturally whenever I think about animal husbandry. It then turns, of course, to laundry. And maybe you're one of those people tempted to buy an internet-connected washing machine because these things exist now and you can control your washing machine from your smartphone. So if it's too difficult to reach that far or to, you know, briefly separate your eye contact from the smartphone in your hand, then you can do so. And some of these devices aren't even new. I mean, the one which everyone always talks about are internet fridges. Well, internet fridges have been sold since 1999. That's 5 years before the likes of Facebook and Amazon even existed. People were trying to sell you internet fridges. Good luck getting your security updates for that one and installing Silverlight on it, if you can. And, of course, they're still being sold today. Here's a modern internet fridge. Which is being touted around. And, you know, it's not necessarily the case that these things are insecure. I don't know about these particular products. They may be absolutely wonderful. But you are putting your trust that they are going to be secure. And time again, security researchers are finding vulnerabilities and revealing that some devices are exposing too much information. So where's it going to stop? I mean, what can't we connect to the internet? What's the world really crying out for? Well, I got the answer this morning. The answer is an internet-enabled toothbrush. Now you can monitor how much. This is so pathetic. You know, they treat us so much like children now. They not only think that we won't floss, but they think that they can encourage us by gamifying the experience. It will actually give us a big smiley face the more we floss. So the idea is that you take your iPhone or Windows phone or Android or whatever, and you carefully, carefully balance it like they have in the promotional photograph, right next to the bowl full of soapy water. Well, that's good, isn't it? Maybe these guys actually aren't in the business of selling internet-enabled toothbrushes. Maybe they're actually in the business of selling waterproof cases. I don't know. So many vendors are embracing the Internet of Things, but many of them do not have a history of security and privacy. And they don't have the decades of experience that, for instance, operating system vendors and other people who work in the more traditional IT space have. Because if you've been working on PCs for the last 20, 25 years, viruses, malware, hackers are a way of life. You know, it's an everyday occurrence. And so we've had to harden and protect ourselves as a result. But there's all these vendors now thinking, how can we sell our toothbrush? I know, we'll connect it to the internet. That's what's happening. And mistakes will happen because to err is human. And there's other things which are human too, like passwords, for instance. So you see these road signs at the side of the road, and quite often they're not properly protected. There's a little bit of computer in there. You can open them up. They're not connected to the internet yet, typically, but you know what? Give it a few years and they will be. But what they do have is default passwords. So any hacker can come along. And we've seen plenty of examples of this. This one says something rather rude about reading a book. Not a good idea, by the way, when you're driving. So very bad advice they gave you there. They could also give you bad advice as to which way to turn. We've also seen ones which have said zombie attack or Daleks invading. Just kind of amusing, I suppose. Whatever gives the hackers the kicks. One thing which gives them the kicks is to take over electronic billboards like they did here. This they did over the internet, and they changed electronic billboards across the United States to display an image. I can't show you the image which they put up there because, well, I would say it's rude, but frankly, I couldn't work out which part of the anatomy it was. But just to say the word goatsy, if you know what that is, I'm really sorry for you. If you don't know what it is, Google it. Well, don't Google it, Bing it, right? But it's not just pranks. There's also things like webcams and CCTV. So we see hackers obviously taking over webcams all the time and blackmailing people. But we've just in the last few weeks heard reports of hackers who've been taking over the CCTV cameras in shopping malls. So spying on you when you're outside Lidl. It's like it's embarrassing enough, but now they've actually caught you on film, the hackers. That, like, forget Ashley Madison. That's the thing which is really going to do harm to your reputation. And what they were doing was they were hacking these cameras not actually to spy on you, but instead to use the embedded Linux computer inside those cameras to launch denial of service attacks, to use CCTV cameras in shopping malls to bombard websites with so much traffic they fall over. And imagine the difficulty of trying to fight that. It's bad enough trying to get home computer users to protect their home PCs to prevent them becoming zombies and participating in botnets. But imagine if it's CCTV cameras and you have to go round to each and every one to update it. Earlier this year, things got even more serious because a couple of researchers demonstrated to a journalist how they could remotely hack vehicles. They remotely hacked a Chrysler Jeep as it was driving at 70 miles per hour down the freeway. And they were able to take over a number of its controls. They were able to cut the engine, for instance. Now, they could do that to any particular vehicle of that particular brand, which was traveling around, which was internet-enabled. And more cars these days are internet-enabled. In a few years' time, it will be impossible to get a car which isn't internet-enabled, which might have all kinds of benefits. I see that. I get that. In terms of sat-nav and entertainment and information and so forth. But they have to be built securely as well. And these particular cars, which is the ultimate mobile device, weren't built securely. And so 1.4 million Chrysler Jeeps were actually, a recall was put out in order to get them back. But it's not just cars, it's baby monitors, it's the billboards, as I've said, it's all kinds of devices connected to the internet which haven't got proper security in place and aren't properly defending that data. And the results can be serious. Here it is again, the Jeep on that particular demonstration. The hackers took over the controls and were able to demonstrate how they could actually drive it into a ditch. Kind of scary. So talking about scary, has anyone ever seen the show Homeland? It's a good old piece of bunkum, really. Claire Danes slowly going bonkers and Damien Lewis pretending to be American. and does a jolly good job at it. There was a particular episode, episode 10 of season 10, of season 2. If you get that far in Homeland, Damian Lewis's character goes to visit the Vice President of the United States, and he has on him a device. A device which wirelessly attacks the pacemaker inside the Vice President's heart, the thing which keeps him alive. And the Vice President dies. He's assassinated as a result. Completely preposterous and ridiculous storyline, right? The sort of thing you expect to see on TV. Apart from 2 months before, security researchers found that they could do exactly that. From a distance of 30 feet, they could take over pacemakers, defibrillators inside people's chests, and actually cause them potentially to die as a result because of vulnerabilities in these devices. And the threat was considered so serious that American Vice President Dick Cheney revealed he had been told by his security advisors to turn off the Bluetooth connectivity on the device in his chest because he had a history of heart problems, because they were genuinely worried that that could be an attack vector. Kind of scary stuff, this Internet of Things. We need to relax a bit. We need to sit down and watch some telly instead, right? That would be good. So, what will we watch? What should we watch? Well, we could watch something on a USB stick, of course. If you plug your USB stick into one particular brand of television, what you may have found was it was actually collecting information about all the file names stored on your USB stick and uploading them to the cloud, where they were going to do, well, actually what they were planning to do was advertise to you based upon what they believed you were interested in watching. Could be embarrassing depending on the kind of movies you keep on your particular USB stick. It was also collecting information about the regular channels which you watch. So if you go to Freeview and you go, you know, to channel, I believe it's channel 71, something like that, I heard, someone told me in the green room, then maybe you don't want that kind of information coming out either. And what was worse was it was not only collecting this information by default, but if you went into the settings of your television and turned off watching info, it completely ignored that setting. It still carried on collecting it anyway. Oh, and did I mention that it was also transmitting it in plain text, which means it could be intercepted by hackers potentially? So they've rolled out a firmware update since because there was a big fuss about it. But there's also an issue with our televisions listening to your conversations. Are they hearing what you're doing? Because people apparently now want a television which they can go, volume up, volume up, volume up. You're shouting at it all the time rather than just pressing a button. Apparently that is a desirable thing to have. Again, I'm beginning to think the television manufacturers aren't really sure how to differentiate their devices. So there was an issue with one particular television which was collecting people's voices for voice control and then sending it into the cloud. Now, it's kind of reasonable that they would send it into the cloud to analyze it. I mean, those particular television manufacturers may not be experts at analyzing words and analyzing what people are saying. Maybe they farm that out to a third party. But have you trusted that third party with that kind of information? Do you feel comfortable with that? The thing is that we're making decisions based on the company we're dealing with, and we don't realize necessarily quite how much data we're sharing with them because we don't bother reading the terms and conditions and the privacy policies because, hey, guess what? We're human. But also, the partners themselves, we don't necessarily know that they even exist. We're not even aware that our data is necessarily going to them. So we have to ask ourselves, are companies being responsible with our data? Do we trust them? Do we trust the third parties they deal with? So whenever you're dealing with an internet service or a cloud provider or something like that, you need to always ask yourselves, how do I feel about these guys looking after my data? Are they going to do a good job? Do they know about security? And it's no wonder people began to make links with the like of George Orwell's 1984. You can go and read the book yourself about all these screens which are watching us constantly and collecting information. Kind of spooky stuff. So, the Internet of Things. Good, bad, indifferent. Anyone want to vote? You see, it's kind of cool. We all love gadgets, right? That's why we're in this industry. We kind of love technology and all these things, but we want it to work our way. And the question about whether it's good or bad is kind of irrelevant because it's here to stay. Instead, we should ask ourselves, what can we do about it? What can we do to make things better? And there's some good news there, because ultimately, all these devices in their different shapes and forms, they're just computers. And we know how to do computers. We know how to do software, right? We're the people who are always being called round to our Auntie Hilda's to fix her computer and get rid of the awful browser plugins or whatever has managed to get installed in it, right? We're the people who do that. So we can do this. We can clean up computers. And we can develop software which is secure. We can build systems which have secure methods of updating themselves, which means that if there ever is a problem, we can patch them. Because remember, if you can't update it, you can't patch it, you can't secure it. Everything needs some method of being updated, because vulnerabilities will be found. Maybe not now, but maybe in 5 years, 10 years, and there'll be old systems out there which we want to update. So we can deal with the software and the hardware in that kind of way when we're building it. But there's one other issue. Those are the sort of technical issues. The other issue is the issue of commercial enterprises and what they're doing with it. Because all this data gives new opportunities for big companies to learn about you and to monetize this information, do something with the data which they're collecting. And you have to ask yourself, are they going to use this information to my advantage or to the advantage maybe of someone who's paying them more money? Maybe you're not paying them any money at all. And we're in this really funny situation where there are big internet companies out there. And we think, oh, they're fabulous, they're wonderful. But in fact, they're not really in the business of internet and providing you with internet services. They're really in the business of advertising. So you have to think about those. Sim's story, of course, with the social networks as well. We're willingly feeding it masses of information about our private lives, our friendships, our relationships, our networks. And they're feasting upon this. And potentially it can be abused, either for them to make lots of money, you know, which maybe is a relationship you're comfortable being in, but also potentially it could be targeted in other ways as well. So, if I wanted to give you one message, it's this. You can make a difference. You can make apps and services which don't go the same way as they've gone before. You can build devices and systems which are secure, which are capable of being patched, which treat your customers with respect. Because trust takes years to build, but seconds to lose, and you will spend a lifetime trying to recover it. Just look at the big companies who are getting hacked and the reaction of their customers right now. It makes good business sense for you to be on the side of the good here, securing the information, making sure that it's being held reliably and in a trustworthy way. Because even if you're a small one-man company, trust me, this matters. If a customer discovers that you're exploiting their metadata in a way which they're not comfortable with and they didn't consciously agree to, they may be going to take their business elsewhere. And if you're building Internet of Devices, Internet of Things devices, you need to think as well, how am I going to secure these? How am I going to process these? And it's not always going to be easy because these devices are being built very, very cheaply because you're competing with markets which maybe don't care so much about security. And it's going to cost something in terms of CPU time, in terms of battery life, to do the proper encryption and so forth. But you guys are smart enough to do this properly and treat your customers with respect. So trust me, this is really important. When you go back to your offices, go and tell your colleagues, go and tell your bosses, be that voice of reason in this world gone mad, saying, every time we use a piece of our customer data, we're going to make sure that it's secure, and we treat it with respect, and we show so much care about what we do with it and where we share it. Thank you very much.